Welcome to Dr. Jeffrey Roth's Looking Good and Feeling Great podcast, live from Las Vegas, with his co-host, Daryl Craig Harris.
Hello, this is Dr. Jeffrey Roth, your board-certified plastic surgeon in Las Vegas, Nevada, and we've made it to episode 3 of our podcast.
Yay!
Woo! Yes, crowd goes wild. So, yeah, both of them.
We were actually just talking about that. They have the Knights, the Las Vegas Knights are in playoffs.
Yes, thank goodness. So, yeah, and I don't think people in Las Vegas realize how hard that is to do.
Since with no audience.
So,
also, right?
Yeah, well, one, you get into the playoffs, and then two, without an audience. And that's happened a couple times when I was on the East Coast. They had a measles outbreak, and they played some championship game, some New England championship game with no fans, and they thought it was really kind of weird. And then here we are, you know, 30 years later, now it's on a national or international scale. And I guess just the other night, somebody was telling me we had the NHL, Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, WNBA, we're all playing a game, which I think has
crazy?
Never
yeah.
happened.
Yeah.
But with no fans.
Right.
So, which is really
and they were talking about their piping in the crowd noises.
And they're piping in the crowd noises,
just
right?
Kind of fun.
So, yeah, I guess you have to select where you get your crowd noise from, because, like, I was in Philly for 7 years, and you probably don't want that crowd noise.
Or maybe you do. I don't know.
Or maybe you do, right. You know,
same. Here, the Philly, New York audience is crazy. Right?
Yeah, there's the boo birds were out. Yeah, no, there's... I mean, Dave Brenner had, you know, he was from Philly, so he has all the great Philly stories. But yeah, they boo funerals, you know. He's only steal from the best, right, Milton Burrow. But he's got a ton of, you know, and they're passionate. So like 10-6 or 6-10, they're out there,
right,
the snow, drunk, but they're doing it. So yeah.
So I know one of the things we wanted to talk about today was cool sculpting, which is a lot of people have heard about that, but maybe they don't know exactly what that process is, how long it's been around. We did that on me at your office.
Uh-huh.
So I'm a little bit of experience with that. Tell us a little bit more about cool sculpting, how it's,
sure.
where it
so
came from, all
cool
that
cool sculpting,
stuff.
Well, a couple, three things. Is I'm not an early adapter by any stretch of the imagination, right? Mm-hmm. So some guys, whatever new thing comes along that buzzes or blinks or whatever, they're on top of it. And you go to these big meetings, hopefully we'll have big meetings again at some point, and there's, you know, 50 booths of all these folks with all these gizmos. Whether it's a radio frequency or laser or whatever it might be, that's great. The question is it does it really work? And you have to found it in science. Okay. So the only thing that I have in the office is the cool sculpting machine. Because, frankly, I hate bitching. So if there's a machine in my office that works 70% of the time, I can't stand it because there's 30% bitching I can't stand.
Right,
so
right.
The cool sculpting for us works about 95% of the time, which is about my threshold.
And it's a great non-invasive option.
Yeah,
right?
It's really nice because when you come to our office, again, what I like to do is give options. And my head works from least invasive to most invasive, right? So the first thing I say is diet and exercise. Okay, that didn't work. You know, lotions, potions, creams. Okay, can we do stuff with peels? All right.
Right.
Can we do something with Botox fillers with a needle in the office? And then when it comes to, and there's surgery, of course, but sometimes there's that area where folks aren't quite ready to commit to surgery, but they do want something done.
Or maybe they don't necessarily want to do liposuction.
Right. So yeah, for whatever reason. So for example, cool sculpting. Well, a little bit of background on cool sculpting is what is it? Basically, it's a machine. We have two. We were the first ones in town to have them, so we were the dual sculpting experts.
how long has that been out?
Whatever that means.
Or been available, I should say.
So probably available about, I want to say 10, 15 years at this point.
Okay, wow.
So it's not it's
been
a
around-ish
technology, but it's been around for a while. What's really interesting how it turned out was it was based on observation. The observation they had was in England, these kids would have popsicles, right? And they would put them in their mouths and they would actually lose fat in the the buccal mucosa, the cheek, right?
Okay. Wow.
And so basically, like, well, that's interesting. And then they also found that female equestrians, horse riders, especially in England where it's so darn cold, would go ahead and lose inner thigh fat because of the cold against their inner thighs. Okay. So taking that, they went ahead and took it to a couple of guys over at Harvard. Of course, it's Harvard, right? that were doing a lot of laser stuff.
Sure.
And so what they did was is they kind of, because they have you know, Santa's workshop there with all the lasers.
It's right,
like,
right.
You know, Q's office. And so what they did was is they figured out how to make this machine. What the machine does is it's got a big old suction cup on it, simplistically. It's got a suction cup on it. And then so you put it on the area you don't like, and then you press the button, and it sucks the fat into the suction cup. Okay. And then you press the second button, and it gets it really cold, 4 degrees centigrade, right? Fat cells.
It's a bit of a funny feeling at first.
Oh, yeah.
But once it gets, once it sort of tingles and it gets numb, essentially.
Yeah. So, so you've been through it. So there's a little tug first, and then it gets cold because it's cool sculpting, right?
Right.
So basically kind of like, you know, sticking.
Hence the name,
right? So what a great name. Perfect. Yeah. So just like, you know, you sprain your ankle, you know, you stick it in a bucket of water and you get numb, same sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah.
So it used to be an hour. Now it's, you know, 30 something minutes or whatever because we have the new adapters. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. But fat cells don't like that. And so fat cells preferentially over other cells will die off. And then we can usually get about a 25% reduction, which is not bad for sitting there watching Netflix.
Right, because you're not actually having surgery. It's non-invasive, which is a great, I mean, and also too, what's interesting is there's a lot of different areas you can actually work on, more than just the obvious. I mean, one of the things was under the chin.
Yep.
Right? What are the areas that you typically work on?
Sure. It depends on the adapters, and now we have all the adapters, So it's really, frankly, become my first line of defense for the upper arms, the bye-bye arms, where you keep waving and your arms keep waving bye-bye right afterwards.
Sure.
Because you go ahead and you not only do you get the fat, but in some cases, and it's a fat-killing machine, not a skin shrinkage machine, but in our experience, you get a little bit of skin shrinkage with that as well. So for under the arms and inner thighs, frankly, it's my first line of defense.
Sure.
The other thing too is like you said, is the underneath the chin, and so many people hate their neck.
Right.
So many people hate
their
chin.
I have the triple chin.
So that's right.
I guess I don't know.
So that's a nice thing to do as well.
Sure.
Guys sometimes come in for chest stuff. A lot of abdomen, a lot of flanks, a lot of the bra fat area, all those sorts.
Is there are you seeing a lot more men?
Yes.
In general, really, at the practice, right?
Yes. So our men is about 10% of our practice, which is about the national average. Mm-hmm. And they're coming in for, that's a whole, you know, we can do a whole, you know, hour or two on just men. But basically, they're coming in for rhinoplasty, liposuction a lot, some tummy tucks and, eyes and face surgery as well.
So with the cool sculpting, once you actually freeze the, or I guess you say, like, kill the fat cells, what happens with those? They get
Great question. So basically, like any cell in the body, it's got a certain a half-life, a certain time it's going to be around, right? Mm-hmm. And it winds up dying. And then so the body, the little white cell, and we've all seen the little illustration, comes by and gobbles it up, kind of like Pac-Man, and then brings it over to the liver, and then you go ahead and excrete it. So just like any other cell, that maintenance issues that dies in the system, the body will go ahead and take care of it.
Right.
So, yeah. Cool. So it's not like something that's laying around somewhere. The body is constantly renewing itself and constantly taking
itself. And you've actually, your office or your practice is sort of an ambassador for school sculpting. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've actually, we've been fortunate again here in Las Vegas is folks come in from everywhere. And again, when we have...
Yeah, because we're close to LA.
Yes. So when we had big meetings and people were coming in from, well, everywhere, our office got selected to go ahead and wheel our machines down and teach other people to demonstrate it and actually teach other people how to do that.
Okay.
So we
because you actually did I know I did before I did it. You did an informational meeting. How often do you do those? Are you still doing those?
Well, I like teaching. I like talking. Hence the podcast. I guess otherwise it wouldn't be here. But I really liked being a chief resident and a senior resident. I like being a professor. I was there for about half a second because I like talking to folks,
and educating people.
And frankly, that's what I do all day long.
Right.
Whether it's I'm in a room with 400 people, or whether I'm one to one with somebody who's talking about, you know, getting their ears pinned back.
When you're in school for you know, obviously for the doing plastic surgery, which is obviously something where people are directly affected with their looks and that kind of thing. do they really emphasize, hey, explain clearly?
Oh, yes.
Instill confidence, and, you know, what's the medical school approach to that?
Sure. Well, yeah, the medical school approach is, well, first it's, you know, see one, do one, teach one. Right? So and that's really how you learn something, especially surgically. So, you know, you see a hernia. Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting.
Right.
And then you do a hernia. Oh, well, that's different. Okay.
Right. Because it's all, everyone's a little bit different. Right?
And then you teach one. I mean, it's like playing basketball, same thing, right? So you can go ahead and read up on basketball and you can watch all the film you want to, but then you got to get out to the court, you know, because that's a whole different thing. And then teaching someone, whether again, you're teaching basketball or lacrosse or surgery, whatever it might be, some skill, then you really learn it, because guess what? You have to know the next steps, and you have to know, or try to anticipate what your student's going to ask you. And guess what? They're going to ask questions, and you should know the answer. And sometimes they'll ask a question that you don't expect. And that, I think, that's why, one, the program is so long, and then two, the program, especially residencies, is there's lots of presentations. In fact, every time you, it's presentation on rounds. Every time you go ahead and see a patient, and you'll see, let's say, 30 patients in the morning before we go into the operating room and stuff. And you'll say, oh, this is Mr. Smith. He's a 32-year-old, you know, et cetera, et cetera. His status post colon cancer resection on, you know, post-op day two. And so you do this, and this, and from the third year student all the way up to the attending, this is the pattern, et cetera. Right. And you're presenting in front of the entire team. Mm-hmm. And the entire team, from, again, medical students to residents.
We kind of talked about that before. They kind of go over, even you were talking about even having the medical, I suppose it was not really the word, but where you guys all get together and you kind of critique each other.
Oh, yeah. That's M&M conference. And that's morbidity and mortality conference, where you go over all of the things that shouldn't have happened last week. And that's an art form in of itself. But but to answer your question is, I remember this one student, she's a great gal, smart as heck and everything else. And just to paint a picture, a small Asian gal. And she wasn't good at... she was really good, but she wasn't good at presenting on rounds because she was shy and wouldn't project. And so, and there's like 10 people in white coats.
Because that's not necessarily a natural thing for everybody.
No. And actually, it's the number one fear, as you know, is getting in front of people and speaking.
Right.
The people would rather die. Fear of death is 20%, and fear of speaking is
30%. And when you're in the medical field, actually, you have to, obviously, when you're speaking, you also have to be very clear about what you're saying.
Right. And people are going to ask you questions. Sure. Okay. So whether it's the patient, whether it's your attending, whether it's a professor, whether it's your chief resident, whatever it might be. So this, and she's smart and her words are right and she's getting it right, but she can't present well.
Right.
So what I did, because everybody's like, I'm sorry, you know, she couldn't hear.
Yeah.
So what I did is I took five steps back. I told her this. I said, I'm going to take five steps back and I want you to present to me. Forget about everybody else, to represent to me.
That's a great
idea. I said, well, yeah, but you're way over there. I'm like, yeah, you're going to have to speak up. And okay. And she did, and she was presenting to me. She spoke up. Everybody could hear her, and they saw that she was smart, and then she saw that she knew what was going on with the patient, and she saw that. So, yes, sometimes...
Just the communication aspect.
Right. So to answer your question is it's not just science, and there's a lot of that, and it's not just can you sew and cut, and it's all that, but also it's... I think it's important to teach, and again, because you're listening, or you should be listening, and then you're also teaching not only the patient, but the patient's families. You're teaching the nurses, hey, I want this dressing done this certain way, if you could, please, because this is why. And then they go, oh, okay, I get it. And so usually everybody in medicine has been a student for a long time, one. And then two, but they like learning stuff. And so
you have to, to go to school for that.
Right, otherwise it's really not worth it. So, and it's you're a lifelong learner. And again, I had a professor of mine, Gil Gradinger, and he said to me once, he says, Jeff, he says, in plastic surgery, he says, if you get bored in plastic surgery, you're not reading enough.
Yeah.
Because there's always something
coming. It seems like there's always new procedures. There's always new. Right?
So, yeah, no, what we're doing now, we wouldn't dreamed of 20 years ago.
The technology.
Having a robot go ahead and assist you with general surgery.
Right.
That's crazy talk 20 years ago. I mean, that's science fiction Jetsons kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's exciting because also, too, even from a plastic surgery standpoint, you have like less scarring, you have less issues like that, which are important.
Sure,
right?
It's all those principles. Basically, can we work in a smaller hole? Can we work through a smaller keyhole so that people can? Again, when I was at the VA in Philadelphia, we kept guys in house for 4 or 5 days after hernia surgery. Now people are, you know, shoving them off the table and, you know, getting them all out of there. Laparoscopic cholecystectomies, where it's the gallbladder surgery with a camera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. They would stay 2 nights. Now that's an outpatient case. They're doing total knees here in Las Vegas, and they're, you know, in an outpatient surgery center, having them stay for a night or two, and then they're off and running. So so the turnaround time is so much better.
Right?
Yeah, because the recovery is so much faster, which is good because people should be up and getting around, et cetera, et cetera, because there's less pulmonary complications,
et cetera. Just less trauma in general, right?
Yeah. So the whole idea is create less trauma, you're absolutely right, while still getting a good result.
Right. Yeah. We had talked about this before, and I used to live in Tokyo, and I actually had the lap band procedure. Mm-hmm. And I know you had done some of that, just kind of keeping in the same cool sculpting fat issue. What's your thoughts on that, on the...
That's a great question. Again, when I was a general surgeon before as a plastic surgeon, and so that was really starting to come in vogue in the 90s.
Okay.
When, first of all, using cameras and...
Because that's basically a laparoscopic.
Yes. Right? So you put a camera in, and then you have a couple more ports, so it's kind of like a big Nintendo, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so we would go ahead, and where I was, is we were doing gastric surgery, and we would do all sorts of... we would take... the intestines and kind of manipulate them around, or we would staple off parts of the stomach so the stomach's not so big. So there was a few different operations.
Right, at that point, they were still wasn't quite sure what was effective.
It was a bit in its infancy, and then, of course, you always want to have a bailout. Well, geez, if that didn't work, you know, what do I do next?
Right.
And so at that point, we were really kind of going through this, and then they came up with these the lap bands or the donuts and everything else. And I think for a certain segment of the population, I think it worked.
Right.
But you can't just do one thing.
It's a lifestyle.
You got to go back, and that's you bring that up because if we go ahead, our best successes and what we found when I was at USC is these folks. If you wanted gastric surgery at USC, at least back when I was there. This was like a year or two program. And what I mean by that is they would have you talk to a nutritionist. They would have you go to a group session with six other folks.
Right, that's actually what I did in Tokyo.
Right, you know, and they found that all that really makes a big difference.
Right.
In fact, when I was in Philadelphia, we had this gal. We did her gastric surgery, and she lost a bunch of weight. But then she started coming back, and she would be up 10 pounds and up 20 pounds and up 10 pounds and up 20 pounds. And we finally said, well, what's going on? I'm fine. I said, what's going on? And she actually finally said to us, she said, you really want to know? I said, yeah, no, we really want to see. Something's going on here. And before we do $1 million worth of workup and everything else, what's going on?
Right.
And she says, my husband likes me better fat.
You know, that's interesting. Yeah, that's a whole other subject, right? Yeah.
So that was one thing. And then the second thing was, okay, but how are you gaining the fat back? And she says, I'm taking pepperoni pizzas and I'm putting them in a blender and I'm drinking that to get enough calories to get fat. Because the stomach, when you staple it back then, it was about two thumbs worth of stomach, right?
So maybe
a little bit. So people got full fat. Right. So that's why you had to eat all these little meals a day, et cetera, et cetera. And so she
was
really went out of her way.
With the liquid end of it, she was ripping her way around it.
Exactly.
That's it. That's a big part of, I've sort of been heavy most of my life, but that's a big part of the psychology aspect is not to be, you know, ignored in that situation, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think those folks that with support and know what they're getting into and know that also, by the way, this isn't a ta-dam, cure, magic wand.
Right.
But by the way, yes, you have to walk. Yes, you still have to watch your diet, even more so, because you can't sit down and have an ossobuco if your stomach is two thumbs worth of size.
And they're not going to enjoy that very much.
Not so much.
They're not going to enjoy the aftermath.
Right, no kidding.
Yeah.
So, and then there's, you know, different things. Some people can eat things or not eat things depending on the operation they had, et cetera. So I think that conversation of lifestyle, I think of that conversation of wellness and healthiness, not only wellness of, okay, what am I putting in my mouth, but also what's going on around you.
Sure.
And especially in Philly at that point in time, there's a lot of stressful stuff going on and, you know, what are your responsibilities with with food and kids? I mean, do you have to prepare food for other people?
Yeah, because I mean, that's the other thing. Like, you know, if you're just a single person and you're living that life, it's much easier to make those changes. When you've got a family and you're feeding your kids, right, and the kids want spaghetti and they want pizza.
And mac and cheese and pizza. Yeah,
it's tough,
a whole different thing. So, and again, you know, people go ahead and some guys advertise and, hey, it's a quick fix, come and get it. Mm-hmm. But the guys that I think do the best at that is not only the guys that could cut and sew, but actually have a program, or they can refer folks to a program.
Right.
And that, I think,
so
that's
more holistic approach.
Yes, that's exactly right. You get a better long-term result that way. And so, again, some people will go ahead and be that aggressive. Some other folks aren't that aggressive. And then getting back to the cool sculpting stuff, is that's a middle ground, you know, kind of that as well. And with the cool sculpting, it's interesting because we have lots of folks that can't take off time, right?
Sure.
So my CEOs, some other folks, and they get in there, and they're in the cool sculpting, and they're on the Wi-Fi, you know what I mean?
Right,
lawyers,
sure.
I mean, they're banging it out. CPAs, same sort of thing. We also have some of the IBFF gals, the ones that like diet themselves down and kill themselves in the gym, and they look great, but they have that little genetic thing. And so sometimes we zap that, and because they don't want to take off any time.
What do you think are your best candidates for the cool sculpting?
I think it really depends. Well, first of all, folks with soft fat, if you will, the pinchable fat.
Right.
Hard fat, less so.
So maybe like the people with the saddlebags or the
yeah. So folks with a love handle, for example, my dad. So hi, Dad. So you know, my dad, my brother have gone through this. So first of all, do I think it's safe? Yes. Otherwise, I wouldn't have unleashed it on my family because I like my family. So that's number one. Number two is and that's kind of the litmus test in my office, anyways.
Right.
If I'm in with a patient, often in my head, I'm like, what would I tell my wife? What would I tell my cousin?
I mean, that's a great rule of thumb.
And
because
if it's not the same, then I'm a charlatan.
Right.
And that actually clarifies, because there may be two or three different options. And sometimes patients ask you that, doc, if I was your wife, what would you do?
Yeah.
But I'm like, well, that's exactly the question I ask myself all the time. And this is what I would think, blah, blah, blah. And that's kind of how that goes. But my dad, perfect example, 84 years old.
And I love your dad.
Good shape.
He's the character.
Free to go. Yes, he is. He's free to go home, by the way. So he's good. So. And there's 1,000 Marvin stories, but we'll get to that. But anyway, so he walks every day. He's in good shape, but he's genetically has these love handles. Thanks, Dad. And he's got some stents in. Right, he had a heart attack and stents. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. So he's not an operative candidate. So he's not going to go to the operating room.
Right, right.
But he came in and we zapped him a couple of times, and he loves it. Got about 25% reduction, and he digs it. And so it's those sorts of folks, I think, that want to say, okay, well, don't really want to take off a lot of time. Don't want to, I can't take off a lot of time or whatever. I'm homeschooling, like whatever that might be.
I mean, there's really not a lot of recovery from that, right?
No. So most people obviously go to work that day. Some folks may be a little bit sore, but most everybody, 99%, goes to work the next day.
Yeah, I was
a
little sore. That's when I did it.
Yeah. So having said that is people really like it. For the convenience aspect and for the but it's that patient that wants to, okay, let me get about 25% and I'll be good, sort of thing. And some folks say, well, geez, doc, I want you to, you know, be aggressive, take out every fat cell. And you got to go, okay, wait a minute, can't take out every fat cell. those, not so much. But the folks that say, well, geez, I don't want to take any time off,
kind of your goal in that situation is to create very realistic.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure. And again, that's one of the things we do in our offices is really, try to underpromise and overdeliver in as much as we really try to educate and say, okay, this is really what it's going to look like. And we do pictures and we do audio and we try to go ahead on hit on whatever that person uses to learn stuff.
Right.
And then we always listen and then they can ask questions and buy their questions.
I like that. Actually, my ex-wife, which you met, she came in from Texas to do a consultation on breasts. She was basically looking for a lift because she's had 5 kids. And what I really liked about how you dealt with that was you gave her a lot of options. We kind of talked about that before. And I think that's, to me, it just seems like such a great way to run your practice as a doctor. Education, it seems to be so important.
Right? Sure. No, and I really think that. And we have tools in our office. We have diagrams. We have cartoons. And we have before and after shots. But oftentimes the patient will reveal to you what they kind of want with the questions that they ask.
Right. And sometimes they're maybe a little shy about asking.
Right. And
so
the whole shy thing. Yeah. So a great story about that is we had this one gal, terrific gal, a small I still see her in my head. And she came in for breast augs. Okay, great. So she comes in. She's an A, right? Okay, mm-hmm. fine. And we say, all right, well, great. What, you know, what size are you looking for? Right. What size you want to be? And she says, oh, well, doc, I think I want to be a B. Oh, okay, great. So, well, till you do me a favor, this is the homework that we send home to a lot of folks. And we say, mm-hmm. Come back with some photos that you like, sure. right? So Victoria's Secret girls are usually Cs, Playboy girls
right,
Ds,
sure.
Hustler girls Fs. Okay, so we're, you know. Yeah. So anyway, so she comes back and she says, oh, yeah, I found some photos for you. And mm-hmm. and this was before, you know, Instagram and this and that. So sure. people bringing in magazines. But and so she brings back a bunch of photos of Coco, Ice T's wife.
Yeah, you mentioned that to me.
And I'm like,
it was a gorgeous lady.
No, yeah, she's gorgeous. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And but I'm like, okay, she ain't a B.
Yeah, no, right? not by any means.
And but the point is, and I said, well, what is this? What you want? And she said, well, yeah. She said, well, why didn't you tell me?
Right.
And she says, well, I thought it was going to be rude if I said it was. No, you have to tell your doctor.
Now's the time, right?
You know what is going on,
sure.
and so that. So that we can get you where you want to go, if you can.
Right.
Now, she would never have been Coco size because she was an itty bitty tiny gal.
Right.
And so we talked about that too. And so we settled on something and she came out great and she was happy, et cetera.
But, yeah, because sometimes they have a thing in their mind, but like you want to guide them where they're actually
going to
be ultimately really happy.
Well, yeah. And again, now, and especially with the younger ones, and we've talked about this. And by younger, I mean teenagers and something, but even. The Instagram generation and with filters on top of filters,
right.
you know, they want to look like this. And I'm like, look, they don't even look like that. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. We were talking a little bit about this earlier, but I have I got a message from somebody who's a teen actually. And, you know, in high school, a young teen, I think she said she was 14 or 15, about breast reductions. So the question I would guess, and I'm a lot of people don't really understand or know this, but what would be the age for stuff like that?
That's a good
question. In other
words,
getting a breast reduction, even plastic surgery in general for teens.
Right. So, yeah. So, again, we can do an hour on when is the right time for plastic surgery. And as plastic surgeons, it's phenomenal because we operate from the day of birth on to the very last day. In as much as we plastic surgeons do cleft lips and palates.
Sure. And those are often young.
Yes. Right. So a few days because they can't suck and they can't suck, they can't eat, they, you know, all that. So so do that hand as well if you have extra figures, if you have syndactyly fingers stuck together and all of those.
I mean, because obviously part of that, the cleft palate is obviously a health issue to begin with. But then also, is there a consideration for getting that done before they actually get into school?
Oh, of course. So, yeah. So, again, you want to do that. Well, for a variety of reasons. One is on the cleft lip, cleft palate thing, is you want them to have, in a perfect world, and so many centers of excellence are set up all over the place, you have the plastic surgeon, this is a team now, the plastic surgeon working with the orthodontic people working with the speech pathology.
That really is a team thing.
Yeah,
right?
Speech pathology is key for those folks to go ahead and be able to, you know, say the PPPs and those sorts of things. And swallow correctly, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go on one of these missions, you do the best you can, everything else. But here in the States, most of the university teaching hospitals now have cleft lips and palate centers, and they do phenomenal work, and I don't do any of that anymore because they do such a good job of it.
Right, that's pretty much all they do.
And I send it to
and
those.
And they have
those
there's actually medical teams that go to South America.
Yeah,
right?
and they do phenomenal work. Right. And there's a bunch of them out there, whether they do burns or they do hands or they do cleft lips and palates or they do, you know, whatever. But
sure.
Yeah, the medical missionary stuff is phenomenal. What those guys and gals can do. So getting back to. When is a good time? And we talk about this. I mean, the cleft palate is easy because you do that as soon as they're stable and big enough. We talk a little bit about ears. You know, when is a good time to get your ears pinned back?
And what's that? That's procedures.
It's called an otoplasty.
Okay.
Odo meaning ear, plasty meaning to shape or form.
Okay.
That's your Latin lesson for today.
Yeah, good.
Sister Mary with the really Latin. Okay, so. So otoplasty. So it's basically your ear pinning and that kind of stuff. And so those kids, typically you want to get to them before they start to hit school age and get started in T's, Dumbo, this and
right,
that.
Right,
so, but we've been catching a lot of kids, and this is one of the classic Hollywood plastic surgery moments. There's a gal who's 16, 17, right? Mm-hmm. And doesn't want to play sports because she doesn't want to put her hair back.
Yeah.
And it gets teased all the time. And it's tough enough growing up, right? And so they come in, a mom comes in with them and stuff. We talk about things. And with one operation, you go to the operating room and you do your thing. And that's a nice operation because the scar is actually behind the ear. So yeah, nobody sees it.
Almost, yeah.
Right?
Not
so it's really cool. And so it's the classic Hollywood moment that the patient is in the room and she's up on the little patient seat. And you give her a mirror and you start unwrapping the dressings.
Right.
And the dressings come off and she looks in the mirror and starts crying. And
yeah, it's life-changing.
And mom starts crying. And that is the moment that really plastic surgeons live for.
Yeah.
Is all the training and all the stuff you got to do and all of it. It's the ability to make a difference in somebody's life.
Sure.
And that's when it gets really cool. That's the cool part of it all.
Yeah. So. And it's, I mean, that's the thing, like we talked about that before, even, you know, supermodels, everybody has that one thing or a few things that they don't like, and then when you're a teen, especially a teen girl in school, with all the social media stuff that happens,
more brutal.
So
and again, the standards now, or what we perceive as standards, they're so high, it's unfathomable and unobtainable, both. And so oftentimes, we have to talk to these folks and teach and really get them off the ledge.
So in terms of, like, we were talking about the breasts, not only reductions but augmentations, what's sort of the cutoff or beginning ages that makes sense to do, I guess?
Right, great question. Now, we're talking a little bit about your friend who basically the breast macromastia, too big breast, right? So we want to go ahead and take them. The other thing too is we've seen a lot of gals with significant asymmetries. One will be an A, and the other will be a D.
Right.
And that's
so different,
hard
from side to side.
Yeah. Then that's hard, especially to the bras and the date and mm-hmm. the whole. So we see a lot of that. But so to get to your point is a couple things with neck pain and bra strapping and back pain and stuff. One of them is the weight or the mass.
Sure.
Okay? And the other is what we've found is the pendulousness, how long they lay on the chest itself. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, if you can help with the pendulousness, I think that's where we get
a lot of
the bang for the buck. Because it's kind of like if you have a backpack and the straps are too long.
Sure.
And you go ahead, you put the rucksack and you go ahead and you
solves
put
a lot
the,
of issues.
Yeah, you put the straps smaller where it's supposed to be, and you put the breast where they're supposed to hang. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, okay, well, they've never been there before.
Right.
And then you can play sports. Then you can go and run around stuff. So to answer your question, it depends on the person.
Okay.
In a perfect world, you want to wait till 18.
Because you want to get them to their growth spurts.
Right. In a perfect world, some folks write that the female breast is not quite mature until about age 22, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But having said that, we've gone down, especially with folks that really have gigantomastia and that sort of thing, to about 17 or so. I don't know if we've done a 16-year-old, but at 17.
So at that point, they're pretty much fully
pretty much is what you have is what you have.
Right.
And the other thing too, by the way, is they might grow back, and by that I mean is oftentimes it's a one and done, and things are great, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But I forget the gal's name, the millionaire matchmaker gal.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah,
anyway,
I get her name.
And this is all public record. She's on record as this, but she had one done earlier, and then with growing up and maturity and et cetera. Et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, sometimes they can kind of come back a little bit. Mm. The other thing too is yes, having kids can affect the breast. Yes, hitting mm-hmm. menopause can affect the breast.
Sure.
Weight gain loss can affect the breast.
Yeah, there's so much. Right?
A whole lot of things. But yeah, so that's the aspect of kids. And then some kids have bad moles. some kids. We've been seeing a lot lately of earlobe hole repairs.
Right.
Ton.
That's challenging, right?
Yeah. It's kind of, for me, it's fun. I mean, it's all fun to a point. But
so maybe they have the pieces gauges. Of their ears that stretches out there.
Oh, yeah. So we've had gauges, both male and female, that have been up to, you know, an inch plus.
Wow.
Yeah. Some of them completely blasted out their earlobe, and it's really like two pieces hanging in the breeze.
Sure.
And so we've been doing more and more of those. And that's actually an in-office procedure. Some of them are kind of a straight line repair, and some others
you basically
do
a local anesthetic.
Yeah. So basically so we numb everybody up really well, and we check for that. And then, but especially here in Vegas, is gals have worn chandeliers for so long.
Right.
One. Two is they get caught on a dress and pull. Three is kids grab them and pull.
Right.
And so sometimes it's... sometimes it's an actual elongated hole. Sometimes they're all the way through. And so you take away the very top layer of skin, the epithelium, and then you put dermis to dermis. You put everything back. So there's a little bit of scar. What's really interesting, what we've been getting a lot of folks in now, is the U.S. military won't take you if you're a male recruit with an earlobe hole.
Oh, so, I didn't know that.
So, so if they, the military being the military, they went ahead and said, if I can pull on it and see light through it, go get that fixed.
Because
they had so many guys and gals show up with gauges and big holes, or what's a big hole, what's a little hole. So they said, all right.
And they're not thinking about that when they do those things.
No, right? And if I can see through it, then you know. And so we've had a few folks that have signed up and whatever, and the recruiters or whatever have been sending them by, and we go ahead and you know, patch them all up, and then they're ready to go and serve, which is great. And by the way, anybody's out there in the service and their families, thank you for your service. That's like that's a big deal. For us. So
That's absolutely. What's some? I know you've got a lot of funny stories. What was some of the funny stories related to, not only breast surgery, but I guess just being a plastic surgeon in Vegas?
in
general,
there's a thousand of them. I guess we're on the subject of breast, right? So I'll tell you the story. I had a story that I told to a patient of mine, and obviously I spend way too much time in the patient room. Otherwise, how would I get through the story? Right? It drives my staff.
Yeah, you like to talk.
Crazy.
Know.
Yeah. So yeah, most guys, they come in and they're like, oh yeah, great Tuesday, and they leave, and everybody's like, what? So, but anyway, so I'm in there with this gal. We got on the subject of doing breast surgery, and then for me, you get a serger bra, and there's dressings on it and all that kind of stuff. So you wake up with a serger bra. Okay, fine. It closes in the front so that you can take it on and off or shower. Okay, fine. So anyway, so this was years and years ago, and we were at the old offices, and I think it was a Saturday. I forget what it was. And so I'm in a pair of jeans and maybe a t-shirt or a polo shirt, whatever. And I got a 2-day growth going and a pair of sneakers, right? So just give you that, you know, yeah. So it's not like I just walked off of J. Crew, of, you know, the J. Crew ad. But anyway, so, and everybody's busy. We're running around doing stuff. And they said, oh gosh, we have, you know, a bunch of breast dogs coming up. We need. You know, we usually get them fancy. But says, you know, we need a few to get us through. I said, you know, go to Walmart and get, you know, your white cotton clasp in the front. Oh, okay, great. So I'm looking around like, well, hell, I'll go, right?
Okay, I'll take the bullet.
So, right. So, yeah, because everybody's busy doing stuff, right? So I'm like, all right, fine. And we need this, you know, by either tomorrow. We have, okay, fine. So I go down to Walmart. So I go and I get a shopping cart. And I was like, excuse me, sir, where's the ladies' the brassiere department? And they're like, it's over there. Okay. So I go over there, and I can't find it. And I ask somebody else, hi, do you guys have the white cotton bras? I'm like, yes, sir. I said, oh, how many sizes do they come in? And they're like, five or
like,
seven.
They're like, how many do you need?
Oh, yeah, they're over there. I'm like, oh, okay, thanks, right? So I go over to the bra department, right? And so I take five sizes. I take three apiece, or seven sizes and three apiece or whatever it is, right? So I have a shopping cart painting the picture. I have and people are kind of looking at me kind of funny, like, what's this guy doing in the ladies' lingerie, right?
It's Walmart, so I don't know.
So, could be, anything goes.
Yeah.
So, And so so now I have about, you know, 30 white same bras with five different sizes in there. And so and a Diet Coke. Okay.
Nice.
And so
yeah.
Right.
Good
and so I go to the I go to the checkout, right? And there's never enough checkouts, right? So there's like 20 people in line at the checkout, right? And so I'm the checkout thing, and I'm getting the stink eye from everybody, you know, kind of like, what's this guy do, right? And it's like, am I a softball coach? Am I, you know, I'm like, I'm not in scrubs, so it's not, could like, you be a doctor?
I don't understand.
I don't have a, you know, I don't have a car. I'm just, oh God. So I'm sitting here like, oh, I know I'm on camera. I know they're going to walk me out here in a second. And I'm like, oh God, right? So I'm on somebody's list. And so I go to the checkout gal, and I'm putting all the stuff on the thing in the Diet Coke. And she's checking them, the beep and the beep and the beep, right? Everything else, and she, you know, only have 30 of these. And she looks at me, and she just says, find everything you needed, sir.
How funny.
And I'm like, yeah.
Are you like, are you like beat red at the
so, point? Oh, yeah, brutal. You know, and I'm like, there's no good comeback.
Right, I know what you're saying, right?
Either I can't make an excuse. I'm just kind of like, yeah. Great. Or, yeah, I wish the selection was high. I mean, what are you going to say? You know what I mean? I wish there's, yeah, these come in colors, you know? Yeah. And so I put them on the thing, and as fast as I could, I ran out to the car and went back to the office. I'm like, wait, I'm never doing that again. But that was a story one of my patients made me tell for this episode. So you got to tell the broad.
See, it's the things that people wouldn't expect from a plastic surgeon, all those stories. I'm sure, I know you guys have a lot of stories. Actually, we're going to have your brother, Jack, who's their office manager. Yep. We're going to have him in as a guest at some point, because I know between both of you guys, you must have a whole, probably could write two books.
Yeah, a litany. A story. Well, yeah, and the funny thing is, yeah, we don't go looking for trouble, you know.
Yeah, I know, right? Kinda,
you know, or oddities or something. But
well,
yeah,
we're in Las Vegas.
So you grew up in Las Vegas in the 70s and 80s. You know, stuff happens, you know,
right,
and it's a little bit wacky and wonky, especially in a town back then. Again, there was about 300,000 people, and so
and we're gonna, actually, I think we're going to talk about that too, because I mean, you've been here. What was it, Richard? When you
77?
Wow,
yeah, came back out here in 77, and
it was a different place.
It was a different place, and Jack was 7, I was 11, so we thought that was appropriate, and. I went to junior high school and high school here, and the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's this interesting place, because, like, you know, you're in junior high school, and your buddy's mom shows up to, you know, go ahead and pick him up, and she, you know, she's tall and pretty gal. But, and you don't make anything of it, but she's got a, you know, Lido de Paris,
right,
you know, one of those satin, you know, tour jackets on, because she was a showgirl,
which,
right?
People here is like, oh, that's normal.
Yeah, it's no big deal. So, in fact, it's funny. And they just kind of, oh, okay. Yeah, right. what's your dad? Oh, I'm a dealer. He's a dealer at, you know, Caesars. Oh, okay. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
It's to talk about occupations. And a couple of our dads, it were a couple of dads in our
sure,
circle,
in your group,
in the peer group, they were at the test site. They operate up at the test site, which is really hush-hush and secret, all that kind of good stuff. And
Area 51.
All of that jazz. And they're the ones that would commute on the plane, the white planes with the red stripe, right? Which for years didn't have tail numbers. So they would go ahead and commute on. Anyhow, so it's like, so what does your dad do? And if the line came back was, oh, he works for EG&G in the test site, that was the end of the conversation.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So like, oh, that was the cover story for everybody. Like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so, that's for people that don't know, it's actually now become sort of famous in a way, but there's a plane that leaves out of McCarran every day, and it takes all the people, the workers, out to Area 51, essentially. And that's about all we know.
Right, that's about it. So, I forget the acronym was ALICE, but anyway, so.
Right.
But yeah, and they're, you know, your standard 737s or DC-10, no, 737s, and and that's their commute, because it would take so much longer to go back and forth on bus. And I mean, that's something they fly these guys out. And I think there's two flights in the morning and two flights at night. I forget what its schedule is.
It's
but
funny.
But yeah, their hangar is next to
just living in Vegas.
Sheldon Adelson's hangar,
right,
which is a whole nother story and all that. But our dad, I mean, the dad stories, Jackson will start cringing here in a second. We actually had a jeans store, and I don't know if this is dating myself, but it was a jeans store, and it was Chemin de Fer jeans, which were, you know, your Gloria Vanderbilts,
right,
and your Jordaches and stuff like that. So it was right up there, and it had the sailor pants and all that
Rush
stuff.
Shields.
So right, all of it. So yes, all of it. And but the thing was is they cut them extra long, so the jeans were extra long. So most normal humans would have to take off 5 or 6 inches at the back. But the showgirls back then at Jubilee or the Lido or whatever,
and,
like
they
that,
had to be. What was the minimum
5'7"?
Right,
they had to be 5'7" because all the of
costumes,
the headdresses and the costumes and everything else like that were made for for folks that were 5'7" above. So sure. These gals would, Bob Mackie, yeah, Bob Mackie made all of them. Yep. So so all these gals would come in and they loved the Chemin de Fer band because they didn't have to hem them or anything else like that. Right, because, right. Yeah, they weren't custom. They look great and blah, 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 but they didn't have to go to some custom place because they were long enough and they could actually wear heels with them. So so that was a
and
good
a lot
day.
Of that probably
was
ended up being your customer.
That was, yeah, I didn't even think about that, road. Right? Yeah, go back to, yeah. So, yeah, and so that was kind of a cool part growing up. You would go to the dad at the jean store and sometimes these really tall, really beautiful gals would come in. You're like, holy smokes. So that was and they're all very sweet. But
that's the funny thing about, well, I mean, I grew up in LA, but and Vegas too. Like, you sort of take it for granted that everybody's tall, blonde, beautiful, you know, large breasted, whatever, that you just sort of get used to that. Then you realize as you travel more that actually that life is actually, you know, or even Los Angeles or Huntington Beach where I grew up, you know, you see the people in the Ferraris and all that kind of thing. You think, oh, that's normal. Then you realize later as you get older, like, no, actually, that's not normal.
Yeah, that's not normal.
When you go to Dayton or
not normal. And the other thing is then you go back east somewhere. So I went back east to school and then odd things happen, like stuff like, oh, do you live in a casino? Yeah, sure, Caesar's
exactly,
Palace,
right?
So you live in one. People really live there? Yeah, I live in a house. And all that. But then other weird things is it's kind of like, you know, it gets to about 2 in the morning. You're like, okay, well, I'm going to go down to 7-Eleven. Like, what are you talking about? So
right,
what do you mean?
Exactly.
It's just everything's been closed since, you know, 7-Elevens back east. Back then, we're open from 7 to 11.
Right.
And that
yeah.
was a big deal because stuff was usually 9 to 5.
Yeah.
And
I used to go grocery shopping here at 3 in the morning.
Oh, 3 in the morning. Yeah. Right. So that, yeah. And you go back east. The other thing, too, is you want to go and have a barbecue and you got to go one store for your chips and you got to go one store for the beer and you got to one store for the packaged liquor or wine. Because in back east in Massachusetts and Pennsylvania stuff, they have state liquor stores and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And you can't buy beers on Sunday. So you got to plan ahead. So they have all the blue laws, which are still there. As opposed to Vegas, where at that point in time, they still had, and this is went away, thank God, is to-go cups. Because you would go you know, be out and having drinks or whatever, and time to go. Oh, let me put that in a to-go cup for you, Doc.
And
you would be out with an alcoholic beverage in your car, and so thankfully that went away.
Yeah. Although now we have the dispensaries.
And now we've gone full circle of the dispensaries. But the thing is too, and even at the Smith Center, which is great. And by the way, Smith Center is awesome here, and hopefully we'll get back to that sooner or later with
live. Yeah, and that's a large people that don't know. That's a large, beautiful concert venue,
really trying to get some culture here in Las Vegas. They did a tremendous job on it.
Right. But they have a symphony over there.
And it's tremendous. And they actually give you sippy cups in as much as if you're out at the front, you know, and you grab a drink and stuff like that. You know, you're in a suit, you're dressed up, having a big night.
Right.
And, gosh, it's starting. And so they actually give you a sippy cup with your adult beverage because they didn't want, you know, the upholstery to get messed up or anything else like that. I said, well, this is great. I got a 5-year-old with a sippy cup and I go to Ireland and I get a sippy cup. It's great.
That's funny.
So
I've actually yet to be there or yet to go there, but I've seen the photos and videos. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. They did a nice job. And they have like the big room and then they also have other.
Yeah, they have the Myron's Jazz.
Which is great for local jazz or local musicians too, I guess. And they also do food and beverage and all that stuff there. It's a cool place.
There's a lot of great places in Vegas that people, they only tend to think about casinos, but actually there's a lot of, not only places like that, but also just even nature and within an hour's drive. There's a lot here.
Oh, it's incredible. And you have so many things March, some of my buddies will go snow skiing on one day and then water skiing on the next day.
Because
you can go, you can be up in the snow and then, you know, you can be out
the lake.
That was
sort of the California lifestyle.
Right?
Right? The same.
With a lot less people and hassle and
all that
kind of stuff. So, yeah, and if you really like getting out in nature, there's a ton of stuff to hike and bike and all that stuff. And the Parks and Rec Department here is actually great. I mean, they have, Vegas being Vegas, getting into that, is they have leagues that start at 5 in the morning because one third of the town works graveyard and they get off at 4.
Yeah.
And so they're playing softball and the sunrise is coming up, which is odd anywhere else except Las Vegas.
For here, it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes absolutely perfect sense. So it's and you know, growing up and then trying to translate that to some of the East Coast guys, they look at you like you have two heads.
Yeah, I know, yeah. So, yeah, they can't. It's hard to explain unless you live here, kind of.
Yeah. Yep.
But awesome. So this is, we covered a lot of stuff on this episode. Lots of territory.
Well, good.
So coming up, we're gonna cover a lot of other things. We're gonna have some guests that we're talking about, some really not only from in terms of plastic surgery, but also your with your work with Top Rank Boxing.
Sure. So yeah, all roads lead to Las Vegas. In as much as there's the entertainment folks, mm-hmm. there's big technology coming into town. Amazon is here. We have the computer farms out here. So we are the cloud.
The Raiders
are here. The Golden Knights, Go Knights Go. Yeah. Love those guys. As well as the Aces, as well as AAA Baseball, as well as all of that
so
sort of stuff. Yeah. So it's really, not only is it, you know, showgirls, which are great, but there's actually lots of stuff for families.
So we have a lot of awesome guests coming up.
Yeah. So yeah. So it's
working on the list.
Yes. Where worlds collide from sports to entertainment to surgery to you never
and
know.
And they actually do collide. Exactly.
They do. Yeah. And usually in my office. Is what it all like, you know, awesome. critical mass. So every day is different and you never know what's gonna come in. And that's kind of part of the charm.
People how they can find your office.
Sure.
Your website.
Sure. The website is www.jjrothmd.com, and lots of stuff on the website. We have lots of videos. We have lots of illustrations. We have cartoons. We have all sorts of things. And then the office is easy. It's 702 area code, of course, 450-0777. And so if you have questions, and again, we love questions, we love teaching, ask. There's no such thing as a silly question with us.
And we'll also have all that information on our podcast information sheet. So just take a look there. And you guys can find us on Spotify, Podbean, soon to be on Amazon, Google Podcasts also. That's all coming. It's in the works. And we'd thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely. No, it was an absolute pleasure. And really, go ahead and tell your friends. And if you want to hear a subject that we haven't covered yet, by
absolutely.
All means, send it in. And we'll go ahead and chat about it. Because, again, it's for me, it's really fun.
Yeah,
and awesome. And by all means, if there's something that I haven't thought of or whatever, I will go research it and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, and find us on social media. We have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all the usual stuff. So.
All the usual suspects. Yeah,
exactly.
we're all over the place.
Exactly. So thanks a lot, guys. We'll see you soon.
See you soon.
Thank you so much for joining us. For further information, please visit the podcast website link for Dr. Jeffrey Roth. See you next time.